Hi, this is Jason Fabok, DC Comics artist on Justice League and Batman, and you're listening to The Cave of Solitude.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your comic book and pop culture podcast coming to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and this is episode 76, and you guys are in for a treat. This is, I promise you, a very, very special episode for the Cave of Solitude in conjunction with our good friend Martin Slam Duncan at the Fastball Special. We teamed up, as we have been in these last couple of weeks and episodes, for another interview extravaganza. And this time it took place on Free Comic Book Day, May 6th at Gotham Central. Special shout out to Carlos Camara for taking good care of us, as well as all of the artists and attendees. I mean, it was a great atmosphere to be a part of. And look at the lineup that he had at the shop. He had Gibson Quarter, who's working on The Organ Grinder right now, part of Rage Studios. You think of Rage Studios, names like Ramon Perez come to mind. Francis Manapul, who's working on DC's book, The Trinity. That's huge. And Gibson Quarter's an awesome dude. We had a great time talking to him. Richard Cumley and Fadi Hakim. Richard Cumley, if you haven't heard of that name before, is the creator of Captain Canuck, who is still in the business of working on Captain Canuck, and Fadi Hakim, who is the big boss at Chapter House Comics, which is making a great, wonderful movement for Canadian comic books, and they're relaunching the Captain Canuck books. They've been out for a while now, but we got a chance to speak to both of them as well, seeing what's in the future for Canada's flagship superhero. And we also got to speak with Marvel's X-Men Gold artist, Ken Lashley, who gets on the book, starting with issue 7, which is coming soon. And that's extremely exciting because the X-Men is returning to the teams between X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue that we remember. Our favorite teams growing up, whether you were a child of the 80s reading the John Byrne X-Men and Chris Claremont, or just a fan of the 92 cartoon. So he's a huge X-Men fan himself. We get to talking to him about working on that book. When you cross the street to DC Comics, I can't think of an artist who I would have wanted to speak to more than Jason Fabok. If you've been keeping up with DC Comics in the last couple years, think of the Darkseid War, one of the best Justice League stories I remember reading in my lifetime. Now he's working on Batman Flash crossover, The Button, where we are starting to see the seeds that were planted in the DC Rebirth one-shot, where the Watchmen universe is now infiltrating the DC proper universe. It's incredible. It's an awesome story drawn by Jason Fabok, and I mean it left me speechless. Issue 22 left me speechless. It was a dream to be able to talk to him at such a timely moment in comic book publishing history, in my opinion. You see, I don't want to spoil it. We get into it during the interview. I'm just really excited that me and Martin were able to meet these guys and chit-chat with them. They were super generous with their time. Thank you so much, all of you, for giving us that opportunity, considering how busy you were during the event. So everybody listening, if you want to hit us up at caveofsolitude@outlook.com or thefastballspecial@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the podcast and review us on iTunes. And we hope you all enjoy these interviews and awesome conversations as much as we did. So now just plug in your headphones, turn up the volume in your car, or if you're on the train and you commute to work, enjoy the ride. And thank you for listening to The Cave of Solitude as well as the Fastball Special. I am Eric Anthony. Enjoy the show.
Okay, folks, we're here at Gotham Central on Free Comic Book Day. We have a couple of very special guests. We have Fadi Hakim from Chapter House Comics, and we have Mr. Richard Comley, the creator of Captain Canuck. How are you guys today?
Good. Great.
Okay. I understand there's some historic happenings today. Can you talk about that a little bit and the signing?
Yes, we are here at Gotham Central in Mississauga. This happens to be Free Comic Book Day, and it's also 2017, the 150th anniversary of Confederation of Canada. So it's, there's some significance to this date, Fetty and I are signing the final paperwork for our master license agreement for Captain Canuck for Chapter House. This is for everything, including animation and a live-action feature film.
Fantastic. So can you sort of let us in on any of the upcoming plans for Captain Canuck and Chapter House? What are you looking to release first?
Obviously Chapter House is good and running. Great little thing called the Chapterverse that was released this year.
Chapterverse.
And the Chapterverse continues next year. We've got, like, on Free Comic Book Day today, we've got Captain Canuck Year One, which was actually written by that actor, Jay Baruchel, and Kalman Androzovsky, who's the regular guy on Captain Canuck, that kind of redeveloped him for the new age. And as far as everything else is concerned, this is sort of what this license that Richard's talking about. We're developing a children's animation for 7 to 11 for the classic Captain Canuck. You'll see an animated feature featuring the new Captain Canuck in a year or so.
Right.
And of course, a live action feature is inevitable in for 4 to 5 years. But yeah, so there's a lot of new stuff. This basically means we're going to kickstart all of our studio stuff, which has sort of been in production for quite some time now.
So you're alluding to a Chapterverse.
Yeah,
so are we going to be seeing some crossovers with Captain Canuck?
Absolutely, yeah. So like this year, in the beginning of this year, we relaunched that character from the 40s. His name was Freelance.
Oh.
And as well, we had a new title called Agents of Pact. There's another title that we're relaunching called Fantoma. And this is like one of the first female superheroes ever, actually before Wonder Woman.
Oh.
Captain Canuck, then there's Northgard, and a new title called Fallen Sons, which kind of includes, can't really spoil it for you, but it's sort of, it comes in and around with Captain Canuck kind of in the middle, and all of a lot of the secondary and tertiary characters. It's an amazing title. That one's written by Van Jensen.
Fantastic.
Green Lantern. So really, really great stuff happening.
Fantastic. And let's talk a little bit about Captain Canuck. So there's been a bit of a huge resurgence in Captain Canuck from the original run in the 70s when it first came out. Can you talk about maybe how has the character somewhat evolved from what it was back in the 70s, the 75 run, to what it is now? Do you find that the character's changed a lot, or is it pretty similar to what the original line was?
Well, I mean, we're both the classic Captain Canuck,
yes,
and then what we're referring to as the new Captain Canuck. Basically, the new Captain Canuck is a re-envisioning, an updating of the character, a new costume designed by Kalman. But there's also a classic Captain Canuck series running at the same time. So it's, the resurgence kind of includes the new and the classic. In separate stories.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question for you. Sorry to interrupt,
yeah,
Martin.
For those who don't know about Captain Canuck in detail, could you describe a little bit of what the character is, what your inspiration was for him, for those who have maybe never heard, but they're interested in the concept of a Canadian superhero?
Okay. Captain Canuck, I first published it in 1975. And Captain Canuck is a fellow by the name of Tom Evans. Him and his brother start out as Mounties. They are almost conscripted into an organization called CISO. I was writing it in 1975, but I set it's set in the distant future of 1993.
That's right.
Okay? So it just, which seemed so far away at the time. So I envisioned Canada being a much greater power in the world, and CISO was essential to fight terrorism. So that was the premise to Captain Canuck. And then there's a host of characters, which have all been updated and in the new series. Some of the characters from the original series are now female. For example, two of the CISO agents that work with Captain Canuck in the original series, Redcoat and Quebec, are back, but in the new series they happen to be female.
Right.
So yeah. That's a real, real quick update, yeah.
And can you talk a little bit about the animated series? So I discovered these a little while back, and I had to watch all of them because they're amazing. Some really great songs, like there's Rush songs and things like that that were involved. I was absolutely shocked and delighted at some of the Canadiana references that were on that. So how did that all happen? And can you talk a little bit about more of that? And are we going to see more of that?
Yeah, for sure. that all kind of happened right back when I first got the license from Richard. It was sort of the idea of redeveloping Captain Canuck for a new age. And that's kind of where that came about. Everything that Richard was talking about turning Quebec into a female as well as red coat. And yeah, that animated series, like every single time around this time in an interview, once I talk about the animated series, it always sounds like I'm name dropping, but man, there's a lot of talent in Canada. It's like Chris Holden Reed voices Captain Canuck. Paul Amos voices Mr. Goal. Laura Vandervert from Smallville and Bitten does Blue Fox. Tatiana Maslany, Orphan Black, obviously, does Redcoat. AJ Fry is even in it from Innerspace. And the smallest bit part is even Thomas Craig, who's plays Professor Walker, who's he's from Murdoch Mysteries. So, and then of course the music, Great Lakes Swimmers, Platinum Blonde, Rush. Jason Priestley's actually joined on as well. It's actually Mark Holmes, the lead singer of Platinum Blonde. Actually, he makes a comment saying, "Hey, you couldn't have done this during Loverboy's set."
That's right.
Yeah, so just kind of like a throwback to, so it's just a lot of fun, obviously, we're really looking forward to doing a lot more in the future, of course.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And from a Chapter House perspective, are there any other projects that you wanted to talk about today, like some of the bigger ones that are happening right now?
Yeah, like I said, there was for 7 to 11 for kids, there's a classic Captain Canuck. I can't really tell you too much about it because we're not allowed to release that information. But it's really super exciting. It basically shows a lot of the... it's going to feature a lot of the characters in the chapterverse. Maybe something like a Teen Titans Go, as far as I can say. But a lot of fun. A lot of fun so far.
Fantastic.
So with something like Chapter House, there's so many different comic book companies nowadays that pop up and publishers that are coming out. So for Chapter House, what's the target audience that you guys are going for? If somebody does want to get into it, where could they start? How could they find the books? What would you recommend? And what's the target audience for it?
Basically, obviously, Canadian comics are a little thin at the moment, and that's something that we kind of want to change. So we do want to become the quintessential comic book company publisher for Canada, and we want to basically get a lot of smaller independent publishers, basically get them up and running as well. We did this thing with last year was the 75th anniversary of Canadian comics. And so we did up a small logo that we just gave out for free on our website and just encouraged a lot of smaller publishers to actually use it, which they did, which was a lot of fun. So our whole idea is to basically, Canadian publishing, like I said, is thin at the moment. There's so much great talent here. We lose a lot of talent to the States. There is no reason why, people can't work from home. This is our home. I get to work from home. I love it. So basically, and I can't stress the amount of talent that's here. It's enormous. Richard always says that there's something in the water here, and there really is, man.
I'm looking around, Ken Lashley is going to be showing up here. We have Jason Fabek from other, and you're absolutely right. There is so much talent, homegrown talent, particularly in Ontario, across Canada. So it's great that you're sort of reaching out and bringing all these talented people in to work for you.
I'm good.
Are we good? Okay. Thank you very much for your time, folks. And I hope you have a great free comic book day.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Thank you.
And we are back at Gotham Central on Free Comics Books Day. We have artist Mr. Gibson Corder here. How are you today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Fantastic. So I'm looking down at your table, and I see a copy of The Organ Grinder. So can you tell us a little bit about your work on The Organ Grinder, sort of the elevator pitch? What is it about?
Okay, sure. My elevator pitch would be it's a supernatural Western about a one-armed gunfighter, chain-smoking monkey, and a cursed organ. So there you go. That's pretty, and if that doesn't get you, nothing
else. I'm in.
So The Organ Grinder started its life in another publication in an anthology called The Undertow, and it has, luckily for me, and I guess become quite popular, so they've recently collected it into its first Organ Grinder trade.
Yep.
It will continue in The Undertow in the seventh issue, and it's an ongoing story. It's going to be two trades, ultimately, and then we'll see what we do after that. But yeah, I get to draw a chain-smoking monkey, and I get paid for it. So it's I'm living the dream.
That's incredible. So it's more of a supernatural story, but it's a Western story.
Yeah.
Now, personally, I'm a big fan of Western stories, Western movies, Sergio Leone.
Me too. Yeah.
So where kind of did you draw... What world is your Western? What world did your Western story come from?
I don't write it, but right. I think it's kind of heavily influenced by a little bit of like The Dark Tower. There's some Clint Eastwood. There's some stuff like that. The writer seems to pull that. The main character has an organ. He is an organ grinder, but the organ is haunted, and the spirit, whenever he plays it, comes out and tells him where he has to go and who he has to kill next. And we're not sure why nor what he's done to deserve this curse, but we're slowly kind of peeling the onion back and learning as we go. And his monkey is a sidekick that helps him because he only has one arm.
And when you're drawing the organ grinder, are you picturing any particular person, or is it just something that...
I've got my character reference. There's no one in particular per se. We've since found out it looks eerily like the writer's brother, and he did a cosplay of it, and it was bang on. There you go. Yeah, Luke Donkersloot is the writer, and he does a really good job with it.
Fantastic. So I like to ask this of a lot of the interviews I do. Everybody's got an origin story.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I am looking for Mr. Gibson Corder's origin story. What did you used to read as a child, watch on TV? What are the things that sort of, what was the catalyst of becoming an illustrator?
Okay, well, when I was a kid, and I go back a little farther than some folks, but it was like G-Force and all those cartoons, and I loved them, and I ran home after school to get them.
Yep.
This is obviously before everything was on tape and on demand. And then I was fortunate enough to come up in the time when John Byrne was drawing the X-Men, Uncanny, and I think my very first comic that I ever bought, I was in the hospital, my aunt got it for me, it was X-Men 115 with Sauron, and they're in the Savage Land, and that was like the ultimately best place to start for the X-Men. I loved it. I was hooked. And then Michael Golden came along with Marvel Fanfare 1 and 2, and I was just like, I loved it. I was fascinated. Always drew, and then luckily I'm fortunate enough to do it for a career now. So that's kind of my origin story of interest, origin story of Gibson Corder getting involved in comics.
Oh.
Thank you. People are really excited to hear this story, I can tell. it kind of boils down to Frank Quitely. I was a huge fan of Frank Quitely. He's since a friend, and I know him quite well. But back in the day, and this is going back about 12 years ago or so, I scoured kind of the universe for any Frank Quitely art I could find, and I found he worked for a small publication in the UK in Scotland, like a little underground, and I got in contact with them via the internet and said, look, send me anything you have. I just sent a blind email. I will buy anything Frank Quitely did and tell me how much I owe you. And sent back and saying, why? What's your story? How come? And I said, well, because I'm a huge fan. I'm an artist and I love him. And the guy said, can I see your stuff? Long story short, he said, would you like to work on some of this, our magazine with us? We've got some Alan Grant scripts. And I, like, my eyes bugged out, because Alan Grant wrote Batman, Anarchy, all that shit, right?
Yep.
And I was like, hell yeah, I would like to work on that. So then I started working for a magazine called Wasted, and that was the rest is history. So there you go. That was my origin story.
I have a question. In regards to when you are working on your ongoing book, what's kind of like your process, your creative space that you like to get into? Is there music that you like listening to while you're working on? What are some of the things that inspire you to,
I guess we should maybe backtrack. I'm part of the Raid Studio, so I'm surrounded by some amazingly talented people. And they keep me going no matter what. When it comes to layouts and stuff like that, it's a lot more concentration involved. I don't do listening to music. I really have to think about it. It's very, very hard. But when I actual drawing and inking, yeah, it's all Toons all the time. Or I'll stop and talk to Scotty Hepburn or Francis or one of those guys. Wow. But usually we're all in our zone.
When you're inking,
A lot of Run the Jewels, a lot of Kendrick Lamar, you know, you name it, all that kind of stuff. I have a voracious appetite for music.
That's awesome. Yeah. So are you being around those guys in that, like you mentioned, Francis, for instance, Marcus Toe is there as
yep.
well.
Yep.
It's got to be quite inspiring to be around those guys. What's the work environment like when you're with them? Are you guys bouncing ideas off of each other? Is there
okay?
Being
so
on the inside. Of
yeah,
the-
yeah, I get that question a lot. Like, what really goes on in the studio,
yeah.
right?
yeah, yeah.
I would say that it's mostly quite quiet. I mean, we're all busily doing our work, but we always kind of break and shoot the shit once in a while, and it's, you know, just kind of people start yelling from their desk once in a blue moon. Anyone that's interested kind of pipes up, but. We just got back from a raid retreat, which was really cool, and we talked about projects. We're doing an anthology coming out this fall, which is going to be really, really neat. It's going to have a little bit of everyone from the studio. It's going to be a very awesome book that I'm very excited about. We'll launch at Fan Expo in the fall. Cool. We'll talk more about that closer to the date, right. But I mean, it'll have Francis, Ramon, Scott, myself, Marcus Toe, Nimit. I mean, it's going to have everybody, so it's going to be a pretty decent book that we're excited about. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Yeah, very exciting. Okay, and I guess talking about Free Comic Book Day. So,
it's mayhem in here, right?
Yeah, it's mayhem in here. It is mayhem. Like, do you participate a lot in these Free Comic Book Days? And what do you think about the whole Free Comic Book Day?
Sure.
Thing?
Okay. Well, I have in the past. At a couple different comic shops, and fortunate enough that I've been invited a couple times here to Gotham, and I love it. I think it's really good for the industry. I'm very encouraged by the diversity of material that they have, because, I mean, already this morning, you guys look around, there's a lot of young kids, yep. young girls, and there's books for them as well. It's yes. not just Spider-Man, Batman sitting there. There's probably 40 free books over, you know, what, 8 different publishers, which I think is very, very healthy. Canadian comics, you know, superhero comics, weird comics, you know, horror comics, yes. you name it. And I think that's very good for our industry. Someone, I guess, described this as it's like Black Friday, but for comic shops. And I think that's the best description I've ever heard of Free Comic Book Day. It seems to encourage people, and hopefully we expand our footprint in the industry, or just, I guess, not even in the industry, but I mean with people that might not have otherwise come into a comic shop, and they come back. So that's right. my hope.
So you kind of touched upon it. You're right. There's a lot of more female people coming into the store. You know, diversity seems to be a very hot topic right now. A lot of people are seeing themselves in comics where they might not have seen themselves in comics
absolutely
30 years ago.
Yep.
I'm guessing
middle-aged guys on the run from zombies, that kind of thing, right?
That's yeah. right. Yeah, yeah, that's right. So is this something like when you're working on other and I know you're the artist and but is this something when you're working on projects, do you sort of keep in the back of your mind as well, or is this
I don't necessarily know. I mean, obviously, depending on the project, if it's geared for a certain, like if it's more of a funny book, right. and I've done some of those, then I'll take a little slightly different approach to it. I'm not going to go grim and gritty, and I'll try right. and keep the tone of Fair what enough. The writer has set. I mean, Organ Grinder is kind of a horror book, so, or like a supernatural western, so it's a little darker, it's a little more jagged. Some of the sci-fi stuff that have coming up with the Raid Studio and the anthology is going to be a little more, I don't know, a little more modern looking for me. You know, I'm getting some coaching from Scotty Hepburn, which always helps, and okay. I'm going to ink it a little differently. So I try to keep the end reader in mind as best I can, but the tone of the project sometimes eclipses that, or that it really drives what I'm doing.
Right, right. Okay. All right.
Just a fan question. Seeing that you're working on something creator-owned,
yep.
and you mentioned the X-Men, that you were a big fan of the X-Men
yep,
growing up,
sure.
do you have a personal like dream project that you would just love to work on or jump on the opportunity?
Yeah,
what
yeah.
would it be?
For me, and it would have to be Deadpool. I love Deadpool. I love the character. I love the fact that he's funny.
Yes.
He's everything to me that Spider-Man used to be before he got married and they really messed with this timeline. He's a more violent, funny version of Spider-Man for the current marketplace, and I think it works well. I that would be my dream project. I mean, I've done a few prints of him. People seem to like it. I just love the character, and I would get out of bed so early in the morning to draw Deadpool. You have no idea.
So, Marvel, if you're listening, you got
another. Yeah, there you go.
There you go. How do we make this happen?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Cheers.
Okay, we have Mr. Jason Fabek, Mr. Batman himself, and we're at Gotham Central, so how fitting. So Mr. Fabek, I'm going to get right into it. Right now, you are pretty much on the flagship comic of DC Comics. So what could you give us your journey and how that sort of evolved from sort of when you started into this business and how you got into pretty much on the cusp and the flagship Batman title?
Yeah, I think I've been doing this job now for about 7 years. I think it's going on 7 years now. And I never would have thought I would be at what I'm doing now. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me, and I try to, you know, keep myself humble and just thankful at every opportunity I get. You know, I want to do the best I can and just enjoy it and be thankful for the blessing of getting this job and having this job, because I know a lot of people would just dream of this. This is something I've been dreaming about since I was a kid. And, you know, I got in, kind of the backstory is that I was apprenticing with Dave Finch. He lives in my hometown near Windsor, Ontario, right. And I was apprenticing with him, and he was teaching me kind of the ropes and how to draw, and he was critiquing my art. And at the time, I think he was working at Marvel, and then he made a move to DC. And originally, I was going to help him with backgrounds as a pencil assist.
Right.
But he was doing covers at the time, and he didn't need any pencil assist. And so he said, hey, let's see if we can just get a job, see if we can send your stuff in, see if you'll get a job. And so I did, and I got in. And my first issue I did was fill-in for Batman, Superman, issue 70.
Right.
This was pre-New 52. I did 70, and then I did full issue of 71. And I didn't do too good of a job. It was crazy to go from... You're learning to trying to do a deadline. It was just insane, and I don't feel I did a good job. But I got the book done on time, and I think that impressed the editors that I was able to do that. And from there, I wasn't getting work from DC, and I ended up going and working for Aspen Comics, smaller kind of imprint, and it was good because I was able to kind of learn the ropes.
That was on Soulfire, right?
Yeah, Soulfire. I was able to learn how to draw comics, and I was able to kind of get my speed up, and I challenged myself to do a book a month, and those are all the kinds of things you need if you're going to work at DC. And then from there I started working on Batman the Dark Knight. David Finch was writing it at the time, and he needed an artist because they were jumping into the New 52, so I did two issues of that, and that was kind of what started me on this whole thing. That was my break,
right?
You know,
so you didn't have to interview for that particular
run.
Oh wow. You know,
so what's it like to be able to go from working on something independent or apprenticing for David Finch, who everyone held in high regard, and now you jump right into Batman? Like that's the highest point you can get to. You went from 0 to 100. What was that like for you?
It was scary, but at the same time, I was confident in what I could do, and I had good editors. I've always had really great editors at DC who were willing to critique my work, and I was always looking for critique. I wanted to be better. I wanted to know what I could do better and change it, and I've always had that. You know, Mike Martz, who was the editor at that time on Batman, he was the one who gave me that job on Batman the Dark Knight, and I was able to learn from him and kind of learn some of the ropes, and then from that point on I signed a contract with DC right after that, and I've been at DC ever since. And the funny thing is like I've always, like, Batman's been my favorite character since I was a kid. Okay. To me it was like, you know, I figured it would take me 10-15 years of a career to get to the point where I'd actually get a chance to work on Batman. But an interesting fact is that every book I've drawn for DC has had Batman in it. Every single book. It's like, you know, that dream of drawing Batman was immediate, and it's been ever since. I've been able to work on the character, you know, 6-7 years now. I've been drawn to every book he's been in it, and it's just, you know, it's really cool.
So Batman, I mean, it's got a rich history.
of artists that have worked on this, your Neil Adams, your Jim Lees, Capullos. Do you feel that you're now putting your mark on the Batman? Like, are you coming in and saying, you know, this is sort of my mark, and this is, or how daunting was this task to actually take on this character?
Yeah, it's always daunting because like you were saying, you know who all these other artists who have come before you have done on the book. Yep. I still don't feel like I've done my Batman yet. Like, I still don't feel like, I mean, Justice League with Geoff Johns was really cool, and I was really pushed in some different directions with that. And well, I worked on Detective Comics, but I never felt like I ever got the story. I never drew the Batman story. These two issues of The Button with Tom King have been really cool.
Yes.
But again, it's like I'm still waiting for that moment where I can really do the Batman I want to do, visually, storytelling-wise. It's going to come. I know it's in the works at some point. I will. And it is daunting. But the one thing that I always just try to do is, with Batman, I always just try to draw Batman the way I want to see Batman drawn. I want to see him big and bold my favorites were like the guys you mentioned, Neil Adams, Jim Lee, Tim Sale. Like all of those guys, like, fantastic. To me, embody the way you're supposed to draw Batman.
Right.
And so I took a little bit from each and tried to merge it into my own kind of look, I guess.
Right.
So you've worked, when I go down your list of people you've worked with, like Scott Snyder on Batman Eternal, David Finch, and then James Tynion, Tom King, like, you're working with some great scribes right now. Can you, and then Geoff Johns, like, top of the DC mountain there.
Yeah.
What's it like to have these master storytellers giving you these scripts? Does it make your job more, the details, make it easier for you to write these stories, or is it, do you feel that it's more of a challenge because you've got these stories to tell from these giants?
You know what, all of those writers have such a strong vision, but the one thing that makes them so great is that they allow you to bring what you want to bring to the table. You know, Geoff Johns, for example, I could have never dreamed I would work with Geoff Johns. Like, he's been one of my favorites, but him and I became really close friends working on Justice League.
That's
and
awesome.
He would call me in the morning and we would discuss like what pages I'm doing for that day. And he would discuss the story and he would pitch ideas for the next issue. And that gave me a lot of confidence. Like, I felt like I was part of the story, part of the writing, part of the team, you know? And I think that showed on the page. I really wanted to go that extra mile with every page of that book to make it up to his standard. He was putting so much work into it. I wanted to do the same. You know, he was great. Tom King with Batman 21, his script was very simple. And he just said, like, if you got ideas, go for it. And I kind of did.
Wow.
I kind of did. I was able to really infuse a lot of my ideas into that issue. And every writer is different. They all approach how they work with you differently. Some are very hands-on. Some are very hands-off.
Right.
But I haven't had a bad experience, in all honesty, working with anybody. They're all big-time professionals, and they're there. If you need, you know, sometimes you're running up against a deadline, and you're looking at the pages you have to draw, and you're like, guys, like, these pages are too detailed. Can we simplify? Yep, let's simplify. And they'll go through and they'll help simplify the script, give you a couple of gimme pages so that you can get through it.
Nice.
You know? And, you know, but yeah, it's a lot of fun, and they've all been great guys, and I've all become good friends with each one of them.
So I want to get a little bit into The Button.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait. I usually wait till the entire story is finished before I read it, but I couldn't wait. I read all three in the last couple of days. So a couple of things struck me, something in 21 and something in 22, which we'll definitely talk about. But something in 21 was the scenes with the hockey game. So I'm watching the game, and being a Canadian, I'm watching those panels, and there's just some such iconic poses that you're looking through that TV set, and you see the hockey players and those sort of poses. Like, what... Sort of, where did you get that from? Like, is that something? Are you a hockey fan?
Oh,
is that
something? I'm a huge hockey
fan. Okay.
Yeah. I play hockey like twice a week in the winter. I play once a week in the summer. And with that sequence, it's kind of funny. Like, I wanted, like, Batman's watching hockey on TV.
Right.
And one of my biggest pet peeves is whenever there's a hockey or sports thing in comics, They usually, like, you know, a guy will be watching sports, like, he'll be watching a sporting game or something in a comic book, but usually, like, the camera angles are, like, camera angles you'd never see
right.
in yeah. actual sports. And exactly. I was like, well, I just, he's watching a hockey game. I want to make it as authentic. So I went through and I watched different games and I tried to get the camera angle exactly how yeah. it would be. And if you notice, the camera is slow, as he's flipping the button in his fingers, the camera is slowly zooming in on the hockey game.
Yes.
Just yeah. ever so slightly, yeah. every single shot. And then once it switches to the fight, you know, like in a normal hockey game, when a fight goes, all of a sudden the cameras are right on the guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, again, I watched a lot of hockey fights, a lot of Don Cherry Rock'em Sock'em videos that I had. And, yeah, I just tried to channel some of that in there. I wanted it to be an authentic scene. And I remember I read a review and somebody was like, well, that those pages could have been more exciting. But I was like, you don't get it. Like,
no.
I was trying to tell an accurate sporting thing, which is never on the page. And so,
totally
and, yeah. and the cool thing about that, though, is I don't know if you follow my stuff on Twitter or whatever, but a couple months ago, I was fooling around with designing, like, hockey jerseys. I was kind of doing, like, these jersey
okay.
concepts yeah. for some... Like, for my local team, the Windsor Spitfires, I kind of did a redesign, just, like, for fun, of their uniform and the London Knights. And then I thought, I was looking up, well, what are the D.C. hockey teams? And one of them was the Blades, Gotham Blades, and the other was the Metropolis Mammoths. And so I said, well, I'm going to kind of do a design of these uniforms.
These jerseys?
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, very
And then
cool.
I think
yeah.
Tom King saw that, and he put it in. He put it in the comic yeah. book after the fact.
So that was his recommendation to make it. Was it just have Batman watching sport, you decide, or did he want hockey?
He wanted hockey, and I think he saw my designs and said, that's really cool, let's put that in the book. And so he did. And so those designs that I did are now, like, part of canon. That's, like, that's the uniform
that's
that they
excellent.
Wear. And
oh, that's great.
You know, so yeah. if you go to my Twitter and you look through that, or even my blog, I think I have I actually posted all my jersey designs, and you can see them there. I did the logo and... tried to make them look authentic and
yeah,
have a little
yeah.
bit of history
they
to
do.
Them, but
yeah, it was not lost. As soon as I'm looking at these panels, I'm like, this is very authentic.
Yeah,
and this is something that I would watch from my living room.
That was a lot of fun.
Batman wasn't cool enough. Now he watches hockey.
Yeah, he watches hockey.
He does everything.
yeah.
So in issue 22, this is, I think everybody's talking about it now. I mean, spoilers for people who haven't read it yet, and we're sorry, but stop listening if you don't want it to be spoiled. But you had, I think, and I've read a lot of Batman, and so has Martin, but to have Batman talk to his father, I don't know if I've ever seen that before. What was that like to be given that script and say, have Batman and Thomas Wayne, Batman, have that heart-to-heart conversation that Bruce has been dying to have his entire life? What was that like to get that assignment?
You know, in all honesty, I didn't really ever think of it like that. To me, it was just, okay, I got to draw these two guys talking. Like, that book was a weird book because the deadline was super tight on that one. I got the script really late, and I had to pretty much, I think I drew 10 of those 20 pages in a week. Like, it was, and so I didn't really have too much time to think, and a lot of that book, actually, in the script was left blank and vague, like they were still trying to come up with a lot of the words. So a lot of it was just Thomas Wayne says something angry at Flash. Okay, so then I draw or Thomas Wayne and Bruce have a moment, you know, Bruce is reaching out to his dad. Like, so that it wasn't until I actually read the book that I saw the script, and I was actually moved to actually read that whole thing, because what Thomas kind of says to Bruce is something that I would say to my kid, you know, like I would say that to my son, how he was proud of him, and that was his,
right,
you know, his whole world was his son, and they made him want to, all of his decisions up to that point he knew were right because he had his most prized possession, which was his son Bruce, you know. And
yeah, right.
it actually moved me
moving.
and it's kind of weird to read your own book, but read a book like that, you've never really read the dialogue, and then you read it and you're like, wow, like that. You know, they
captured it.
They really captured it. And so it's funny. Like, I was very blown away by the response that the fan, like on Twitter and stuff, they were talking about the book. And I was really blown away because I had no clue that people would connect with that issue so well. when you're doing it, you're kind of just doing it. And from my angle, it's just, it's my job. And so you, right. It's kind of like any job. You get up in the morning and I look at what I have to draw for the day. Okay. And I try to get into their heads, but you know, I don't know. You just kind of draw it and it, I think it just all came together.
There was a particular scene when they're having that discussion and Batman's father, he's actually has his back to Batman as Batman's talking. Now, that was a conscious thing that you were doing, or was that sort of in the script? Like, because it almost looked as if he didn't want to look at him for a moment during that scene.
I can't remember if that was in the script or... Yeah. I think it probably was. He probably said something like Batman or, you know, Thomas has his back to him or Bruce has his back to his dad. Or I think, you know, a lot of that stuff was in there. A lot of the times, though, some of the things I did was just because I was trying to make sure this character was on this side of the page and this guy was on this side of the page so that it works. Like, so I think... But I do think, like, Joshua Williamson handled the script on that one. Him and Tom King kind of teamed up. Josh did all the dialogue. He did all the major lifting for that issue. And you know, and he did a great job. Like I said, like, all those guys are great to work with. And that a lot of that issue from my end was kind of more, like, a lot of the dialogue wasn't there. And he just kind of hinted at, like, this is kind of what they're saying.
Right.
And so I would think, like, okay, well, how would he approach that? What would it be? And... You know, I think that's the scene you're talking about. Like, there's one where he's Thomas kind of walks past Batman, and Batman reaches out, and then Thomas turns around and pushes him into the treadmill, so that he, you know. And I had to get him to kind of move across and do that. So, like, yeah, I don't know. It was a really cool book to work on,
and it does open up a lot of things. That one line where basically Thomas is saying, "Don't be Batman, right? You don't need to do this anymore." I mean,
it changes the. Where's the character going to go from there, right?
Like, I remember that line, I think, was in the script.
Yeah.
Because it was like, this has got to, you know, you got to hit this. And, I don't know. Like, it was a great issue. And I really had, I didn't really have too much of a connection with Flashpoint. I mean, I read it.
Right.
And I enjoyed it at the time. And I remember while I was working on that book, I watched the Flashpoint cartoon, like the animated movie.
Yeah, they did a good job.
And I really, like, that's what really clicked me into the character. And just like a lot of these books, when I write or when I draw a character that I've never really had too much interest in, I usually come out of it loving that character. And after drawing Thomas Wayne, it was like, wow, like, this guy's awesome. Like, I wish he had an actual book, because he would be a sweet Batman to kind of
character
figure out and to tell the stories that he might go through, you know. But
there's that moment where Batman throws the batarang at his father's hand to not hold the gun. Like, how perfect is that?
That was a funny little sequence. I liked that. Yeah. Yeah.
So just quick question. So your favorite Batman villain that you would like to draw? And why?
I think it's always been the Joker.
Okay.
Is it just the facial expressions, all the things you can
picture? Yeah, I think, to me, it's like, as far back as I can remember, it's been like Batman, the Adam West show, Joker, who I think was the first time I ever saw the Joker, and then Jack Nicholson growing up watching So, like, that character, I really like Mr. Freeze. I got to draw him on the Batman Annual a few years back with Scott Snyder, and I really love Mr. Freeze as well, and Bane, he's pretty cool. I don't know, Batman's got such a great... Like, I don't think you can go wrong, really. You could take any of those characters and you could do a great story around it, because each one of his two-face, each one of his villains is so strong and so good. You know, there's no other comic character like that, right?
It's true. Yep.
I really was a big fan of the Justice League Dark Side War. Mm. And I always like asking artists who work on team books, how do you handle the weight of drawing all of those characters and making sure that you capture everyone just enough, or not kill yourself in putting too much on the page? How do you balance that out?
I don't even know. That one was like a whirlwind drawing that series. And I mean, over time, I learned like what to do, how to cut corners, how to tell this, how what to focus on a page, what not to focus on. But drawing a team book is it is truly a different beast all in itself.
Yeah.
You know, drawing an issue of Batman where it's Batman and Reverse Flash fighting in the Batcave, like that was I drew that in 4 weeks comfortably. But trying to do one of those Justice League issues, it was just insanity.
Got the anti-monitor with all the details.
Yeah, every page. But I wanted every page to just ooze detail, and I really wanted it to be memorable. You never know when you're going to work on these books ever again. Like who knows if I'll ever do Justice League ever again? And so when you're doing it, you want to do the best that you can.
Knocked it out the park, though. Definitely.
That Justice League is the thing I'm most proud of. Out of my whole career, that's the thing I'm most proud of, and I still when I look at those issues, I'm happy that I got that opportunity, and I loved working with Jeff, and I know Jeff and I will work again in the future at some point once he's done all of his movie stuff, you know. But it was a lot of fun.
Well, thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate this.
No problem.
All right, enjoy Free Comic Book Day at Gotham with Mr. Batman.
Awesome, thanks.
And we are here at Gotham Central with Mr. Ken Lashley. How are you today?
I'm awesome. Always good. Can't complain.
Excellent. So I'm going to get right into it. Something I like to ask everybody. Everybody's got a origin story. So I'm wondering, what is the sort of stuff that you used to read or watch that spurred you to become the illustrator that you are?
I think my first one that really got me inspired was probably John Byrne's X-Men. It was the one that really hooked me. I mean, everything else was cool and I liked stuff, but when I saw that, I was like, wow, that really, you know, took a bite out of me kind of thing. And then I was a hardcore John Byrne fan after that. I followed him everywhere he went, you know, within reason that I could afford as a kid. But, you know, I went to Fantastic Four. Even though I'm not a Fantastic Four fan, I was a John Byrne fan. So anything that he would do, I would pick up. I remember my two favorite issues of Avengers was John Byrne fighting the Grey Gargoyle. I remember that as a kid going, I love that. It was so awesome. So those are the books that really got a hold of me. And as far as cartoon and things on TV, G-Force was one that really hooked me. Like, I was like, that's really cool. I used to watch, I think it was called... I think it was Tarzan and the Super 7. I think that was another one. Tarzan and Super 7. That was one of my favorites. I think it's called that. I could get it wrong. And Herculoids.
Herculoids.
Anything Herculoids. I even bought anything with Alex Toth. I mean, and now that as you get older, you find out who's really behind all that stuff. So those were my major influences when it comes to TV.
Well, yeah, you definitely have good taste. So Jason or Mark?
Jason or Mark? Jason 100%.
Yes.
Jason 100%. Because Mark was cool, but he was a leader. Nobody likes that guy. You know?
Right.
You want to be the guy. I want to shoot the bird missiles every time I get. I want to smash it. I don't want to wait for the thing and to open. I just want to smash it and shoot the missiles.
Right.
That was my thing. And he had a cool car. And he was Italian. Did you know he was Italian?
I did not.
No, and he was adopted. I'm not going. That's as far as I'll go.
So being a big John Byrne X-Men fan growing up as a kid, now you're on the book, and it harkens back a lot to those characters that John Byrne kind of defined. So what's it like now for you to be on this relaunch of the X-Men?
It's surreal. Like it's a weird experience. I mean, it's, you know, very few times in your life you get a chance to work on the things that you've dreamt of working on.
Right.
I mean, like when you're 9 years old, like the 9-year-old Ken Lashley would say, that's impossible. That you're going to make that, and you're going to get to that point, and you're going to make those books. That's impossible. Like, it just doesn't seem real. So, it's insane to see your name on it. It's weird to draw, you know, a cover. I just finished doing a cover this week. I did two covers this week, and getting a chance to draw some of the classic villains from that era. You know, and I'm not saying anything else. And also, even doing some Jim Lee era stuff. I mean,
yes.
it's cool. It's just an amazing opportunity for an artist to actually, and very few artists again in their lifetime get to play for the home team. If that makes any sense. Or if you're a sports athlete, and you get to play for. I grew up as a Dallas Cowboy fan, and I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan. Not that anyone should be a Dallas Cowboy fan.
Right.
I'm a Saints fan, so I feel obligated to say that. But, I mean, growing up as a Saints fan and then being a chance to play for the Saints would be unreal. So that's kind of what's going on with me. I've always wanted to draw Kenny X-Men. I had a pretty decent career. I'm not going to complain about it at all. But it is an emotional thing when you get a chance to work on the things that you loved as a kid. It is truly different. I cried a little bit. I was emotional when the first book came out and saw your name on it. It's weird. It was just, I don't get that way with other stuff.
Maybe. And I think all the people that followed your career, they know that you're an X-Men fan, and they're very excited that you're going to be on X-Men Gold.
I felt that when I was in C2E2. They asked me to be part of a panel, and I went, and you know, I had to leave because I said yes to an Autodesk event that I was doing later that coincided. Right. Yeah. So I get there, and they announce everybody, and then they announce me, and I got a huge cheer. And I think even the Marvel brass were kind of like, whoa, 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 because it was like, they were like, this is the guy that should be doing the book. Maybe, oh, yeah, he's one of them, because I'm totally that guy, you know. Even when I'm talking to the editors and they say, oh, can you do this, and I go, oh, they send me reference and I go, dude, I have that book. They'll send me I have that book. Like, oh, okay, of course, you know, I appreciate the reference, but I got better reference in issue 120. I got it all,
right?
So it works out.
And you started early on some X books. You worked on Excalibur a little bit earlier on your,
that's sort of a technically an X book, but it really wasn't, let's be honest,
right? Okay.
Yeah, it was. It also it was sort of part of the X-Men office,
right?
But it really wasn't, people would say, classified as an X-Men book, you know. So I don't have any of the core characters in my book. Yeah, I mean, so it was sort of, you know, I had Nightcrawler and some other characters, but I didn't really have, you know, I mean, it wasn't the X-Men book that, come on, let's be honest.
Okay.
So it's kind of great to actually be able to chance, even to get a chance to draw Nightcrawler again. How many times do you get to do it 20 years later, right? So I'm all the crappy mistakes I did earlier, I'm able to fix them now, well, sort of.
Right. You know? But there's a falling for that book. I'll tell you straight up, my sister, that was her favorite comic book, was Excalibur.
That's awesome. I mean, it just, I'm not saying it wasn't. Right. It wasn't fan favorite, but it definitely wasn't Wolverine or wasn't you know, the big title. So
it was kind of like a stepping stone maybe to get to the X-Men.
It was the core books and the other X-Men books, right?
Right.
So like, you know, there was other ones like that, like X-Factor was kind of like that a little bit, but it had more core characters. But well, Excalibur was definitely up to 7 or 8 books. It was definitely the 7th or 8th book, right?
So who's your favorite X-Men, and who's your favorite X-Men to draw? Or are they the same person?
My favorite X-Men by far is Colossus.
Oh.
I love Colossus. Colossus, I just love that character. I think he's one of my favorites. Visually, it's fun to draw. I just did a cover with him. I just did a Wicked cover with him, just, you know. I even said to the writer, I said, well, if I'm going to do this book, I need to do a Colossus issue. It has to be something to do with the Colossus.
Yep.
And issue number 9 is a Colossus issue. So a Colossus and Kitty Reese.
It's
been pretty interesting stuff.
So you're jumping on, you're jumping on X-Men Gold, which issue?
7, 8, and 9.
7, 8, 9.
7, 8, and 9. And I'm doing the covers for 7, 8, 9, and 10. 7, 9, and 10. I redid the cover number 10 already.
Excellent.
Pretty sick.
Excellent. So before X-Men, you were also on some DC titles.
Yeah.
One of the ones that definitely strikes mind was the Doomed title that you did. So what was it like taking on that monster?
I love drawing big creatures. I mean, big, strong creatures. I think if you could get a book, a monster's book for me, that would be perfect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I love, I mean, the monsters are great. So it was fun to draw the retelling of the 52 version of that Doomsday story. My book launched the summer mini series, and then after went from there. But it was fun. I still have some of the pages at home, the crazy rip page, I have that, and some other stuff.
The cover, I love that cover.
Yeah, the cover, I sold that, that's long gone.
Oh, okay.
But everything else is pretty much, some of the key ones are at home still. So it's good.
What was it like going, speaking on DC, to be able to take a character like Superman fighting undergoing a transformation like that with Doomsday? What was that like with the new 52 version of Superman? Because everyone was kind of hit or miss with that, but I would say Doomed was the one thing that kind of stood out as an event. What was that like to tackle Superman?
Well, I mean, it was daunting because the first thing I did was they said, we want you to do the launch book, 37 pages, you know, 36 pages, pencil ink, you're going to do it all, and it's completely Superman Doomed. Tell the story. So first thing I did is I went back, and I have all those books, but, you know, I went and bought digital copies of all the, you know, all those books back in the, you know, and I went back and looked through them all, and I kind of gave my own take on it. Like, I feel like I'm gonna do my thing. But also, I think a lot of people at that point, I had inked a lot of work at that time. I'd done a lot of inking, but not a lot of, that people had seen. So I go, well, let me showcase what my abilities are, right? So I thought it was more of a, it was really a showcase. I think a lot of people were like, well, Ken's gangster. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I mean, but it was one of those things where I've always done stuff for Hasbro and for Lucasfilm, and you know, I'm pretty well respected in that field. In comic books, I'm sort of like a, I'm seen through the eyes of an inker. So an inker is inking my stuff, and other people ink it, and colorists. So it's always not been a true representation of what I can do. So since I did that book, I've been getting more of a showcase on all that can do his thing. And even on X-Men now, pencil and ink and do your thing, right? So I get very little direction from anybody. They kind of say, Ken, do your thing, right? And C2E2 was crazy how many people were showing me so much respect for the new X-Men stuff and talking about the old DC work as well. So it's great. Even now I'm doing the covers for Superwoman. I do them every month. So I do the Superwoman stuff and I'm doing X-Men stuff. So.
Wow. So the name of the podcast is The Fastball Special.
Oh, I like that.
So my next question.
Sure.
Are we potentially seeing The Fastball Special come back?
Dude, you have to be kidding me if you think I'm not going to draw that. Are you kidding me? Like, of course it has to be done.
Is that out of date every issue? Like, who's going to do a Fastball Special?
I have a list of things that I demand, right?
Right.
And most of them are they go, okay, Ken, do your thing. But, I mean, I have a lot of... the people working on the X-Men brand are... our fans, and people don't understand it. I know they think, oh, they're just this business and let's just get it out, but yeah, maybe it was in the past, but these guys now are 100% fans.
Yep.
So when I say something, they go, that's amazing, or they go, I get what you're saying because issue number one, blah, blah, blah. But we're all fans. So they want me to do this, I go, yeah, I need to get this and this and have some fun, and off we go. I think fans are going to be shocked at how fun it's going to be.
So in terms of sort of the history of X-Men, there's been a lot of great writers, a lot of amazing artists. How do you put your mark on X-Men?
I think it's really not up to me to put my mark on. I think it's up to me to draw the best I can and hope the chips fall where they may, and maybe the fans will decide where I fit in amongst the best X-Men artists of all time. It really is not up to me. I just do what I can, and that's it. As far as the best artist, I mean, that's where I cut my teeth. That's where I was like, wow, like this is the people that I love, right?
Right.
The John Byrnes and the, you know, Mark Silvestris and the you know, the Jim Lees,
yes.
And, you know, and the Paul Smiths, and all those guys who did wonderful work on it. You know, I mean, there's so many dimensions. Some you can't even, you know, just Eminem's new run, like all those guys. You know, you want to fit into that and say, yeah, I want to just keep the same level of quality. I want to make sure that it's the best Marvel book that they put out every month. You know, that's my goal, is to be classified as, yeah, those other books are good, but the X-Men is awesome. I mean, I want it to be that every month. X-Men should be the best book every month. Should be look the best of all those. I mean, I guarantee you love your Captain America, you love your Avengers, but to me, X-Men is what Marvel should be, really, is what it's about.
Yeah.
It's about mutants. So
and
let's see what can happen.
I'm a longtime fan of X-Men. That's how I started.
Me too.
Claremont, Byrne. And I got to admit, I kind of went off a little bit on X-Men, and I'm very excited about the turn they're starting to make. So
did I. I mean, yes. Hey, I'm not going to pretend just because I work on the brand, I didn't see the stuff and go. I tried every other month. I would grab a book and go, okay, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? And now it's my turn. Right?
Yes.
Now it's my turn. So I can't. I'm not saying those guys didn't do great work.
Right.
It just maybe the it wasn't the same feel as X-Men was in the past. Right.
Right.
Sure, the times have changed, but that's life. But now I'm telling you, man, that this has been. What everything I've done up to in my career was leading up to this moment to draw X-Men. So
yeah.
I'm telling you, even when Marvel sees the pages, it's like, whoa, dude. Like, because I'm saying, because this
extra.
I'm channeling my inner kid who's like, do this or have this much fun doing it. You know?
This is what you'd want.
Yeah. It is one of those things where I never thought I would ever draw X-Men. I've been drawing for 20 years. You just think it's not going to happen. Like, I'm an older guy. It's the young man's game. Let them do their thing, right? And you never think about it. So when they called me up to ask me to do it, a part of me was like, are you serious? So Uncanny X-Men, when they first, like 3 years ago,
right,
when I started working on it, that was unbelievable because that was the book. Now this X-Men Gold is an offshoot of that, which has the more of the characters, and it has my favorite character in it. And the first thing I said when they offered the book was, is Colossus in the book? That's the first thing I said. And they said, yeah. I went, okay, I'm in. I'm not joking. Everything else
that was
is
easy.
Yeah, I'm in because, you know, I get to draw Colossus. I don't care who else is in it.
Yep.
And then, Nightcrawler's in it, and this guy, and I'm like, okay.
Boston sent a fastball special.
All I'm saying is, you know what I mean? All we need to do is get Wolverine in the suit and we're all set. That's all we need to do. I'm working on it.
At the podcast, you can't see me smiling, but I'm smiling right now.
Oh, man, Logan is cool, but I need a suit.
Do you find it... it's obviously inspiring that you love those characters from your youth, so it's like a passion project, but do you sometimes have to hold back from doing something that you remember that you love so much and not trying to make something original as opposed to going back to something that you love? Is that a little bit of a challenge for you, loving the character so much?
No, when I design for Hasbro and all these other places, you know, you're always mindful of what's done in the past. I don't let it hinder me in any way to move forward. I mean, yeah, I have those books, you know, and I love the feel of those books. But I wasn't hired to trace those books and regurgitate that stuff. I was hired to bring new energy to it, so that's what I do. Well, hopefully that's what I'm doing. But I mean, that's really my job, is not to regurgitate that stuff.
Right.
And nobody wants to see that anyway. Who wants to see a weak version of great stuff, right? You want to see new great stuff. You know, and that's what they, I want to have my iconic, like, there's iconic characters, iconic poses, and iconic covers. We should have those all the time for different artists. Like, you have, I know the three Mark Silvestri covers I like. You know, the Wolverines, you know, the Wolverine, the Brood one. I mean, like, everyone has their own, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the Jim Lee, you know, Gatefold, you know. Everyone has their one. Everyone has their, you know, the John Byrne.
Classic.
Fighting in the Savage Land, the Ciron. That's my favorite cover. Everyone has their favorite.
I like the Mutant Massacre one.
Yeah, Mutant Massacre. Everyone has theirs, right?
Yeah.
So, that's what I'm saying. I want people to say back, oh, I remember when Lashley's run, he had issue number 8 was awesome.
Right.
But number 9 was wicked. You know, like, that's what you want. That's what you want to be able to say.
So I'm going to change gears a little bit.
Go for it.
Talk a little bit. You know where I'm going?
Where are you going?
I'm going to talk a little bit about
Galaxy
Star Wars.
Far, far away.
Okay.
Okay. So Galaxy Far, Far Away. A couple of quick things I want to touch upon.
Sure.
The Star Wars car. So,
Oh, you went back. Okay.
Well, I thought you were talking about
the new stuff I was working on, but you don't know that. I can't even tell you.
Can you give us a hint?
Yes, I can give a little bit of a hint, but as far as I'm going to say, a little bit of work on the all female shorts that have just got announced.
Okay.
I'm leaving it at that. The 2D animated shorts with all the female characters from the Star Wars universe.
Okay. Oh boy.
That got nominated.
That's a taste.
That got I got talked about when in a celebration 2 weeks ago.
Right.
So I was very fortunate enough to do some illustration work.
So you're just saying how much of a fan of X-Men you were, and now you're working on the X-Men book.
Yep.
I understand we're pretty good, pretty big Star Wars fan.
I drove here
and
in a Star Wars car.
My
car is outside with the Star Wars. Yeah. And I love working on the Star Wars brand. I did a lot of the Star Wars Unleashed packaging art. I did the pencil work for that, the colorist. I think they lived in Texas, but I'm a Star Wars guy through and through. I love it. So for me, it's come on, man. You can't have it better than that.
So how does that process work? Like, how much ahead do you, how much do you know ahead of time to be able to do
depending
this?
Depending on who you work with, like each art director is either going to tell you a lot of stuff. I try not to. I don't want to hear it.
Okay.
I want to go in and enjoy the movie for what it is.
Right.
When I went to The Force Awakens came out, I was there for a meeting with Hasbro for another brand with five lions and robots and stuff. But I'll leave that alone. you might have heard of it. But we went down there and we had a good time. And there was a Star Wars room. And the Star Wars room and everything was in there. And I walked past that thing for 3 days without going in there. I was so proud
You're
of myself.
Not going to
and
Star then, Wars room.
I'm not going to Star Wars room. I just didn't want to go in there. And then I went out and the art director who brought me in was the art director on the Star Wars brand. So then he's like, do you want to know? And I went, no. And then he goes, do you want to know? And I went, yeah. So he tells me all the stuff. And of course, like a good soldier, I call my wife right away and tell her about Han Solo right away. And she's like, why would you tell me that? I said, because you have to know.
Someone has to know.
I got to tell somebody. And it was like 6 months out, 7 months out. So this is way before.
And that's the only person you told?
Only person I told. But here's the worst part about it. It kind of ruined it for me because I kept watching the movie waiting for that scene. So I was kind of like, and everyone was like, oh, and I was like, yeah. And I mean, the impact, was gone. Sure, I'm happy I know, 100%. But am I sad that I knew? A little bit, you know?
Are the new product of Star Wars and Lucasfilms, are they living up to your expectations as a fan? Because I remember you telling me at a con a few years ago how you went and watched Phantom Menace again and again on your way to your studio every day.
Yeah, every day.
You're just a hardcore
dude,
fan.
I don't see, people always think that. I know it's funny when people say, oh, the prequels weren't very good. I said, dude, they were still better than anything else. They'd be like, I would rather watch a prequel movie than watch, you know, something else on TV. Right. You know what I mean? Like, the new Star Trek movies are good, but the first Star Trek movies, I'd rather watch a prequel than watch any of those Star Trek movies. I'd be honest with you. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it doesn't mean it's true in my perspective. I'm just saying that's how I felt. And I watched, I mean, the Dooku versus Yoda fight.
The first
time Yoda uses lightsaber. Come on.
I mean,
that alone is better than 90% of the movies out there. And you can say whatever you want and talk smack about it, but it's true.
But I think a lot of people have come around to those movies. Like,
it's not bad. You go back and watch it now. Sure. Oh my God, is there cheesy acting? 100%. Is there some crazy, stupid plot lines? Yes. Absolutely. But is it still a Star Wars movie? And is it entertaining?
Right.
Yeah, I go to the movies to be entertained.
Yep.
I'm not. I don't expect to go to movies and be educated about. I mean, it's still, this guy's green and he's a Jedi and they don't really exist. Yeah. And people are saying Yoda wouldn't say that. Are you saying the imaginary green guy with the force powers wouldn't do that?
Yeah.
Come on, people.
Yeah.
Just enjoy it for what it is.
Getting too deep into this.
Yeah, yeah, enjoy it for what it is, and that's kind of it. You know, don't take it too serious. I remember doing a panel, and somebody asked me something about, you know, why does this person get beat up all the time in the books? And I was like, come on, man, this is comic books. Like, this is just one writer's take on it, and the next writer will write something different. I mean, just enjoy it for what it is.
Right.
Be entertained by it, but just kind of take a step back and just be entertained. If I like something, if I just watch something and I don't like it, I just go, okay, I didn't like that. But it doesn't mean I'm going to make a giant post about how much I hate it. Do you know what I mean? I don't think that's... I think we're one of the only... whatever industry does that, where we kind of like eat our own. We like to eat our own. Like, I don't even read reviews about my own work because people just... You just don't. You can't. It's not healthy for me, you know, because people say things, the negative things, and I'm not mature enough.
It does affect you.
Like, I'm not mature enough to read them and not have it bother me. I admit that.
Sure.
I can tell you honestly that if I read a negative review, I get irritated.
But of course,
you know? So I know I don't read any of them, and I'm okay with it.
It's a passion project, as you're saying. So I can imagine that you're putting everything into these.
Imagine people saying you know, they don't know the history of how I had to draw a book in 2 weeks to get on the deadline,
right.
And then they say, oh, look at that. Look at his face on
There's
page
the unknown,
six,
yeah.
And you're like,
yep.
You don't know anything about what happened there.
Exactly.
But it's okay.
I just want to talk about something quickly. So you are very beloved on the Comic-Con circuit.
Oh,
every time
really?
I get, well,
oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody I talk to, there's always a giant group of people. One of the things I thought was just fantastic, you have this thing where you do sort of a pay what you can sort of situation where if you're doing a commission, you'll say, you know, what to do for it, and then you'll just do a sketch based on that. But you generally give a lot more than what I in my opinion.
Well,
but where did that come from, and why did you choose to do that?
I'm not sure where it came from. I think being a father and thinking about you know what it's like. You know what I mean? To you know, be compassionate and to think about those things. You know, I wasn't always like that. I didn't think like that. But when you have children and you're responsible for them, you think, how do you want your children to be? What world do you want them to live in? Do you want them to live in a world where it's all about the dollar? Do you want to live in a world where it's you know? And I started thinking about those things. Like, oh, I have the ability to change a little corner of my universe.
Sure.
So why don't I just have people? And also, not everyone's financial situation is the same. So, you know, we're all three of us here standing here talking. You know, all three of us, $500 means something different for each one of us.
Right?
So for me to say my drawings are $500 regardless, it's kind of like, oh, maybe two of us can afford it, maybe one of, maybe I can't. Right? So you're telling the fan, we're all equally fans of whatever art is. Why do you say it? It says an interesting message out to everybody that I only respect the people that have the money in their pocket,
right,
as opposed to all of them. If you got $10 and you want a drawing and you waited in line for 3 hours to get a drawing,
right,
you're gonna get one.
So that doesn't necessarily...
And that to me is really the whole point of doing shows. If you're not gonna have the respect for everyone, then you should stay home. And I mean that sincerely. I mean, from the big, I've seen some big time artists who make good money saying to people, I will not draw anything unless it's $400 and up. And I say, good for you, how many fans can really afford that?
Right.
Right? And you're saying the guy who only can afford $200 is not a fan? A guy who's only $100 is not a fan? What are you talking? And also, a $100 sketch this show, maybe a $200 sketch the next show, and maybe a $400 show after that. So it doesn't matter. And you decide what you want to spend.
Yeah.
And I never understood that. I've been around many guys. Some artists have gotten like, why would you charge that? I think you're crazy. And I go, well, I have a day job. You know what I mean? I have other jobs. So weekend stuff is kind of fun. And it's about meeting the fans and connecting with them and signing stuff for them and doing whatever. I think it's about advertising. It's really about marketing this business. That's what really shows should be about. It shouldn't be about I need to buy a new TV or I need to buy something. And some people are really surviving on that, which is another story, right? So more power to them. But in my corner universe, I prefer to always do that and be kind as possible and be respectful of other people's budget, because not everyone's the same.
Everybody will remember that too, though. Like, they'll have that good experience of saying, this guy treated me well and I'm going to support his book now because he's one of the good guys. And I think that's the experience you want to leave, right?
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's a byproduct of it. So be it. But that's what I mean about your corner of the universe. If you control your corner of the universe, I've met people. I met an artist. I went to New York and I want to meet this artist. When I met him, it was so weird because his handler was talking to me, and he was standing beside the handler. Yeah. And then I was looking through the book, and it was crazy expensive. And I thought to myself, I don't want everyone to ever leave the table feel that way when they meet me. I don't want anyone to ever leave that and go, wow, that guy was.
Right.
I didn't meet him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I never met him.
Right.
So that's not my thing now. I would not want to do that to anybody. So. But to each your own, right? To each your own.
It speaks volumes, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I wasn't raised by wolves, I guess. I wasn't raised by wolves.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Anytime.
Thank you so much for this time.
All right, guys.
Okay, thank you.
Peace.
I'm Ken Lash, the artist of X-Men Gold, and you're listening to the Cave of Solitude, which is an awesome name, by the way.